Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. More than 1,500 January 6th defendants are pardoned for the attack on the U.S. Capitol. What it could mean for the future of political violence.
What better way to pay your debt to society than to actually heal the harm that you caused?
Local restorative justice programs working to break the cycles of recidivism. And tax season starts today. What you should know about a new service letting some Illinois residents file for free. And now to some of today's top stories. One Chicago alderman says federal agents who rounded up undocumented immigrants this weekend weren't following standard protocol.
The undocumented community right now is on edge. Everybody's nervous. People are afraid to go to their jobs. They're afraid to go to school. That is tragic as well. You know, there's a dearth of credible factual information out there, and in that vacuum, you get panic. You get people who are believing crazy rumors on social media. That's destructive and corrosive to all of us, and that needs to end too. There's just so much about this that is wrong.
Alderman Brian Hopkins says while he agrees that violent criminals who are here illegally should be deported, he believes the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency ignored standard procedure. ICE says it detained 956 people in raids across the country Sunday. A malignant tumor, a stage actor, a walking crime wave. That's how Michael Madigan's legal team referred to former Chicago alderman turned government mole Danny Solis in court today. Madigan's attorneys say Solis tried to trick the former House Speaker into discussing illegal plans orchestrated by federal investigators. Today marked the fourth day of closing arguments in the federal corruption trial against Madigan and his former right-hand man, Mike McLean. Both have pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors are expected to present their rebuttal tomorrow before jury deliberations are set to begin. Today marks the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp in Poland. On January 27, 1945, Soviet troops entered Nazi Germany's largest extermination camp, marking the beginning of the end of the Holocaust and World War II.
It's concerning in that we're living in a moment of increased Holocaust denial and distortion. And when we don't have living witnesses around to be able to tell us about their experiences, I'm concerned that it becomes easier to deny that history.
More than 1 million people were killed at the site. The majority were Jews, but victims also included Poles, the Roma, and Soviet prisoners of war. World leaders and Holocaust survivors gathered in southern Poland today to commemorate the history. After an 18-month hiatus, the newly renovated Looking Glass Theater is set to reopen.
Like the pumping station next door, we consider Looking Glass to be a public utility, providing an essential service to this community, and we take that responsibility seriously. We believe storytelling is as vital to the health of a city as the water flowing through it.
Yep, that's actor David Schwimmer, you know, Ross from Friends. He is a co-founder of the Streeterville Theater and was on hand for today's announcement. The theater paused operations nearly 2 years ago after funds failed to rebound after the pandemic. Now, Looking Glass has a new lobby, bar, and cafe ready to make their debut. Their new production, Circus Coyote, begins on Thursday. Up next, examining the rise of political violence right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
On both sides of the political aisle are calling out President Donald Trump's pardons for those charged in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. More than 1,500 people received a full, complete, and unconditional pardon from the president last week, and critics say Trump's actions could potentially send a dangerous message. Here with more is Robert Pape, political science professor at the University of Chicago, terrorism specialist, the founding director of the Chicago Project on Security and Threats, and he's in the studio with us. Professor, welcome back, as always. So what is this action, granting clemency to all 1,500 J6 defendants? What does that say to people who believe in using violence to achieve their political goals?
It tells them that as long as you're doing it for the president's goals, he's got your back. This is profoundly concerning, profoundly dangerous as we go forward. We are already in a tinderbox of a country. Over the last few years, we haven't just had January 6th. We've had assassination attempts against Nancy Pelosi, assailants with weapons trying to get into Barack Obama's Washington, D.C. home. We've had two assassination attempts against Donald Trump. Just this week, two people have been picked up because they made assassination threats against Donald Trump. So this is an ongoing problem, and in the midst of this, the president has used the power of his office to legitimate a political violence against the U.S. Constitution, and more than that, to set forth hundreds of people who are dangerous.
And this one is different. This executive order is different from the couple of hundred others that he signed because the president has this authority. It cannot be challenged in court.
The president issued 26 orders on Monday, his first day. This is the one, the most important one, where there is no court challenge. There is no possibility of pushback. This is where the president has complete and full authority and discretion, and he has used that power in order to release literally hundreds of people who were convicted of political violence, hundreds of people who weren't just a problem in the past, but pose a danger going forward.
Enrique Tarrio, former Proud Boys leader, he was among those who was pardoned. Here's a little bit of what he has said.
President Trump said that he was going to view the nature of these cases on a case-by-case basis. And I think he thoroughly did. People who put their hands on a police officer should get charged with whatever it is, whether it's assault on a police officer, but that's not where the problem in these cases lie. The problem is on these cases lie in the miscarriage of justice and how it was performed in these cases in D.C.
Okay, so a lot of questions in this entire thing about the criminal justice system. We'll come back to that in a second, but you have reviewed these cases on a case-by-case basis. What did you find?
I've reviewed all of the 1,600 cases. We've been doing this at our research center at the University of Chicago Project on Security and Threats with research teams, reviewing all over 100,000 court documents. The key thing to know is that not just in a few cases, but in case after case after case, there is voluminous photographic evidence of the individuals directly involved in the violence. Now, the worst of those are directly assaulting police officers or using poles against police officers or other ways to hurt
shields.
Shields. However, the others, even though they're only convicted for misdemeanors, what counts as a misdemeanor here is you are using violence against a police officer, and I, 3 feet away, am saying, go get him. You get assault for of a police
That's
officer.
A felony. You get the misdemeanor.
I get the misdemeanor. We are both encouraging that, and we are overwhelming the Capitol Hill police. So the idea that these are grandmas or tourists, the public needs to know that besides the 1,600, there were another 400 cases of the grandmas and the tourists that the Department of Justice chose not to prosecute. So this is not a case of where there's all these people who are just, no. And if people doubt, which I can understand why they would in today's world, our center has issued just recently two reports chock full of this photographic evidence, case by case by case.
This also, you know, brings up the question of for whom the criminal justice system works and how it works, and what the president's pardon says about the efficacy, about the criminal justice system and its validity, if a president can just come in and wipe out 1,500 convictions.
What this says, on top of the pardons by President Biden, is that we have politics now at the center of our criminal justice system. We have not just pardons being used to commute sentences because somebody been in prison for 30 years for a drug offense. This is going way beyond that. And in this case, with President Trump's pardons, this is the first time in American history and the first time in the West that the chief executive officer of a Western democracy has used the power of his or her office to free criminals who have been convicted of political violence and who pose an ongoing threat. Let me give you one example, if I could, which is Cleveland Meredith. He's not a Proud Boy. He's not an Oath Keeper. He wasn't even convicted of assaulting a police officer. You know what he did? He arrived at the Capitol with his AR-15, 1,000 rounds of armor-piercing ammunition. He didn't make it into the building, but he stayed for 2 days to hunt Nancy Pelosi, and as he directly said, to put a bullet in her noggin. That is the kind of person that we are setting free, and that person can now go buy that AR-15 and those 1,000 rounds of armor-piercing ammunition.
What do we do? You argue for a national campaign to thwart political violence. What does that look like?
What we need is a new, more innovative national conversation on political violence. Too often, what we see is very much like a school shooting. There's an instance of political violence, and we talk about it for a week or two. It's mostly in what we call now the legacy media, and I'm on now the legacy media.
Like us? Yes.
And then we move on to something else. Well, at the University of Chicago Project on Security and Threats, we are now actively developing a major national social media campaign that will operate on a daily basis because we have the voluminous content. We have an ongoing need to have a sustained conversation, and we need to use the new approaches. We can't continue to be stuck in the technology of 20 and 30 years ago. We need to be able to communicate with the public in new ways, and this is part of the dissemination now of scholarship and research.
Okay, more to come on that, obviously. Professor Robert Pape, University of Chicago, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, how restorative justice programs are working to stop the cycle of recidivism, right after this. To reduce the number of formerly incarcerated citizens returning to prison, some communities are turning to restorative justice. It's a practice that promotes accountability and healing for those affected by the prison system. In partnership with students from Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, we explore why advocates say restorative justice is key in preventing further offenses. Here's Taylor Hancock.
A new restorative justice hub will open in early 2025 in Lawndale, a community where 12% of all Illinois prisoners are from.
They get a nice murals and warm, welcoming space.
Restorative justice emphasizes repairing harm after a crime rather than imposing severe punitive measures.
What better way to pay your debt to society than to actually heal the harm that you caused to the community and the relationships that you have in your own community?
Cliff Nellis is the founder of Lawndale Christian Legal Center, LCLC, where youth who get in trouble with the law can get a lawyer and social services for free. Nellis says he hopes to counter the idea that restorative justice is soft on crime.
You know, this idea that it's like, oh, this, you know, slap on the wrist and you're out. It's quite the opposite, actually. You know, this is a much more meaningful human connection, and human connection doesn't happen, you know,
LCLC's new hub will offer housing, structured social programs, and dining options, key support systems to prevent reincarceration. In 2022, LCLC's holistic team served 380 people. 69% of clients did not reoffend while working with the group. Nellis says the impact of restorative justice cannot be reduced to just one outcome.
Restorative justice is much more nuanced and gray. And we say, you know what, we're going to take the situation and we're going to try to help everyone become whole and heal the harm that was caused by that crime and restore the situation.
In Inglewood, the Precious Blood Ministry of Reconciliation, PBMR, is dedicated to creating spaces for survivors and offenders. PBMR's prevention programs, such as this cooking class, are designed to help build self-esteem and teach fundamental life skills to young people in the area. At the ages of 19 and 21, Curtis Dixon was arrested, but today he is on parole and working to prevent other young people from following a similar path.
Being here and working with these, you know, young men and young women, like, I realized, like, this is my passion, this is really what I want to do.
After growing up in the Back of the Yards neighborhood, Dixon found PBMR through a basketball tournament. Over the past 6 years, he says the organization has kept him away from a life of crime by addressing trauma and providing a support system.
It was just so special. We knew we can walk in and go in the kitchen and make some food, or if we wanted to, or just sit down and play board games, whatever, or just sit down and talk and somebody gonna listen. So that's really what kept us coming.
Now, he's 22 and a mentor at the organization.
And I was still bumping my head along the way, getting locked up and stuff like that, but Precious Blood never gave up on me, and I started to change over time.
Peace Circles offer former offenders the opportunity to share openly about themselves, both the good and the bad. Some circle groups at PBMR also bring together mothers who have lost their sons to gun violence or prison. Each circle uses talking sticks, a symbolic agreement to listen and show respect. Peace Circles were also part of Lisa Daniels' healing journey. Daniels lost her 25-year-old son, Darren, to gun violence over a decade ago.
From the time we moved here in 1997, this is where Darren came. He found football. He found a love for football.
During the trial of her son's killer, Michael Reed, Daniels pleaded for leniency. Michael Reed ultimately served only 7 years of a 15-year sentence.
When Michael was leaving the courtroom, shackled, and he looked at me as he was turning away to leave the room, and he said, "Thank you." And I said, "You're welcome."
Daniels founded the Darren B. Easterling Center for Restorative Practices to help those impacted by violent crime and mass incarceration.
I didn't want to be committed to grief. I wanted to be committed to healing and living.
The center offers tailored support for those who serve time in prison and for those who have lost loved ones to violence or incarceration.
I still believe that there's room to bring people who have caused harm and people who have been harmed together, to give each and the other an opportunity to be heard and to promote healing.
Daniel says she hopes to one day connect with Reed. He could not be reached for an interview.
No other reason for me except to just to check in and see if he's okay.
For WTTW and Northwestern's Mendel School of Journalism, I'm Taylor Hancock.
Studies show participation in restorative justice programs led to a 34% decrease in juvenile recidivism. We're back with more right after this. Are you keeping an eye out for those W-2s? Because it is now that time of year again. But this tax season will be a little different. For the first time ever, some Illinois residents will be able to file their federal taxes for free with the IRS's e-file tax return system, DirectFile. The tool aims to cut tax prep costs and make filing easier. Here to tell us more are Jacob Golden, a tax law professor at the University of Chicago, And via Zoom, Richard Kaplan, a law professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you to you both for joining us. So Illinois, we know, is joining 24 other states that are already offering this free tool. Tax season starts today. Professor Kaplan, what does this mean for the millions of Illinois residents that are filing federal taxes this year?
For the vast majority of Illinois taxpayers, they will be eligible to access this program called Direct File, which will not only be free, but might actually interface with the Illinois program so they don't have to enter some of the same information a second time.
So that'll be helpful when filing both your Illinois and your federal taxes. The IRS Direct File program, it started last year with just 12 states as a pilot. Jacob Golden, what's the difference or what was different about the program this year?
Yeah, well, this year is kind of taking us into the 21st century of tax administration for the first time. So you mentioned watching out for those W-2s and, like, you know, like making sure when you're doing your taxes that you haven't missed a form or you haven't typed something in wrong. That's always one of the stressful parts of this. But this is the first time in the U.S. now where you're going to be able to start your, if you're able to use this new program, Direct File, if you are able to do it, you're going to be able to start your tax return using some of the information the IRS already has about you. So you'll be able to import your W-2s, some of the information from last year's tax return, and hopefully it should make tax filing into a less painful process.
People also have a variety of different tax situations. Some can be very complex. Richard Kaplan, who would most benefit from using this tool?
Well, the majority of people would, but there are limits. For example, if people have income for a married couple of more than $250,000, then they're not eligible. If they have a lot of investment income, either from dividends or capital gains, they are not eligible. If they would be itemizing their deductions for mortgage interest or charitable contributions, then they are not eligible. But the vast majority of people have fairly straightforward returns, have wages, Social Security income, are not itemizing their deductions, and those kinds of returns will be eligible for Direct File. And then, with a quick click of a button, they will be directed to the Illinois program called My Tax Illinois, and that will pre-populate, meaning many of the numbers will carry over.
Okay. We know the IRS partners with some services that allow people to file for free if they meet the income requirements. Jacob, what makes IRS Direct File different?
Well, IRS Direct File is, so some of those programs that already exist, the filing ones, partner with commercial tax preparation companies. That's the Free File program, which you could still use and still is in existence. One of the big differences, though, is that, you know, with Free File, it's all these different companies and the eligibility rules to use each one vary. So, you know, you have to worry, do you really meet the requirements for the company you're using? You might, people sometimes get worried they're being upsold for a product. You know, with Direct File, you know, the information's going straight to the IRS. And again, for the first time this year, they're going to, IRS will try to incorporate the information that they already have about you into the return. So at least this year, it might be an easier process through Direct File.
Now, as we mentioned, the program, it was piloted last year. It got some high ratings from some users. The IRS said that a General Services Administration touchpoint survey of more than 11,000 Direct File users found that 90% of respondents ranked their experience with Direct File as, quote, excellent or above average. But it has gotten some criticism from Republicans who are concerned that the program is costly, and, you know, sort of liken it to a fox guarding the hen house kind of situation. Richard, what's your response to that argument that that Republicans are concerned that the IRS is not trusted by all taxpayers?
Well, that's certainly true that it's part of the American ethos to not trust the tax authority. There's also a more philosophical objection, namely that the private sector is providing this service. And in the case of 10 companies, they're doing it for free if people's income is under $84,000. And so the idea is that, is the government appropriating an opportunity here that the private sector is already doing? The private sector program is already free, so it's not as if this is cheaper than that. Other people, however, feel comfortable having the IRS get the information directly and don't have that same objection. But there's no doubt that the private sector is lobbying against this, not because they see the absence of a lot of returns, but this is sort of the camel's nose in the tent. The program is starting small with very simple returns, but as it improves and as it develops, it may expand to many more tax returns, and that's really what they're worried about.
Jacob, we've got about 30 seconds left. You know, could this be, you know, potential competition for some of those private tax prep companies like TurboTax and H&R Block, which can charge a decent amount of money to file taxes electronically?
Well, that's one of the benefits for taxpayers, hopefully down the road, is that for people with very simple returns, they could get these benefits for free, get their credits without some of the money going to paid preparers. And if you don't want to use it, you don't have to.
You don't have to. Everybody makes their own choices. That is sadly where we'll have to leave it. Richard Kaplan, Jacob Golden, thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and proud sponsor of programming that offers advice and strategies to enhance the physical and mental well-being of fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.